You're listening to Healing Conversations, a podcast full of healing stories for everyone. Brought to you by One Mission, a childhood cancer charity who does whatever it takes to get kids through cancer treatment. To learn more about me, Ashley Hasiotis, visit theunspokenbook.com. And to learn more about One Mission, visit onemission.org. That's onemission.org. In season two, you'll hear from so many amazing people on topics that hit home for everyone, from transgender issues, adoption, domestic violence, how men heal, childhood cancer, chronic pain, and so much more. You will be filled with hope for your own healing journey after listening to these stories. Let's dig in. Welcome back to One Mission's Healing Conversations, everybody. I am your host, Ashley Hasiotis, and today we are joined with One Mission's Managing Director, Abby Pasternak, who is a dear friend of mine and also does everything possible to make sure that this charity actually runs. So welcome, Abby.
Hi, happy to be here.
Yes, you are a woman of all trades, a jack of all trades, as I should say. And you also have a really, really, really cool story, which you probably don't necessarily think it's cool because your story didn't just start with cancer, because you've always been an extraordinary girl, but you were diagnosed with cancer. And I had the honor and privilege of watching that whole thing unfold for you. I have seen you make humongous transformations in your personal life. And I find the way that you live admirable. And I would love for you to just share a little bit of your story, how you're doing, for those survivors that are also listening and warriors, a little bit about like how you keep yourself, you know, healthy today. Because for all intents and purposes, although you are dealing with terminal cancer, you are healthy and active, and you have an amazing attitude. So without me carrying on too much longer, could you just tell us a little bit about the beginning of your cancer journey and how that all started?
Of course. So I was initially diagnosed with cancer back in 2017, and I will never forget that moment because I was actually at the One Mission office. Actually, both times I was diagnosed, I was at One Mission offices, but it was definitely a very surreal moment, even though I kind of knew at the time I had that feeling that something was wrong. And I followed up on that and kind of kept pushing to get scans and to double check because I just knew something wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And everybody said, don't worry, you're too young. Please don't worry about this. It's not, you know, and I even had to fight to get a mammogram because I was under 40 at the time. And so they didn't want to cover it. It was something I knew in my heart that was happening, but I unfortunately didn't want to believe it, you know. And the results came back that it was cancer. But at that time, it was actually, it takes a while. You're kind of in this whirlwind of, you don't know how bad the cancer is. You just know you have cancer. So I kind of like to say that in the beginning, it's an equalizer for everybody because quite often you don't know how bad it is right at the beginning until they actually do surgery and take the tumor out. They can't really even grade it because they have to do the biopsy and, you know, test the samples at that point. So initially, I had no idea. I thought for it was absolute worst case scenario. I immediately went to, I'm going to lose my hair. I'm going to die. All these horrible, horrible thoughts. And luckily, I had an amazing support system that rallied around me, including you and everybody at One Mission that said, no, let's take it one step at a time. And you got on the phone with a doctor for me and said, help me understand what's even happening right now. So lo and behold, after going through my surgery, my lumpectomy that I had, and a sentinel node biopsy, which was just trying to see if it had spread to the lymph nodes, they determined that it was a very low grade cancer and it was just stage one. So after the lumpectomy, I moved on to 4 weeks of radiation, which was pretty brutal, but you know, it was kind of just, you're in the process of going through cancer. So you just go through it and you get done. And at that point, I was considered done with my traditional treatment and just needed to go on a medicine called tamoxifen, which would keep it from hopefully coming back in the future. But everybody had said the chances of recurrence for me were so low that not to worry about it, I'm going to go on and live a very healthy and happy life. So at that point, I tried to just say, I'm done with this. I'm moving on with my life. But at that point, also my mindset had already changed. I definitely realized that anything could happen at any moment and that I needed to get out there and live life to the absolute fullest. So then fast forward to 2019, I was kind of noticing that I'd had like a little lump again, but still I didn't think anything of that. I ended up going in for some scans for an upcoming surgery that I needed to have. I found out that the lump that I found was actually benign and it was nothing. But when the scans happened, they realized that I had something in my liver. So they kept having me come back and come back saying, let's just, you know, check it every 3 months. Let's just make sure that it hasn't grown. Unfortunately, after a bevy of tests and after my doctor said there's no chance this could be cancer, it just wouldn't happen, we found out that it was cancer. So it was almost like, even though the lump that I found wasn't cancer, it was almost like I kind of knew again that it might be cancer. So that took me from stage one prognosis to stage four prognosis, just like that. Whenever cancer spreads from, you know, the original location to a distant location, it becomes stage four metastatic breast cancer. So even though it's in my liver currently and could be in other spots in my body, but where they can see it the most right now is in my liver, it's still considered stage four metastatic breast cancer, even though it's not currently in my breast. So that's been my journey so far.
But that's insanity, because I remember that, right? Like, oh my gosh, stage one, the best one we could, except for stage zero, but like,
yeah,
we'll take stage one. Amazing. And then like, whoa, like the wool, the rug, everything's pulled. Yep. And now it's stage four. So I know the attitude that you had at the beginning and then the attitude that you have now about living life to your fullest, but like, can you share a little bit about like that moment when they're like, actually, you have stage four? Like,
yeah.
Right?
So it's weird. It was obviously like heartbreaking, completely heartbreaking. But it's interesting because it was almost like I had gone through it before. And I think I had kind of finally gotten to the point several years after the first diagnosis where I'd started to actually process what happened to me, because you don't process it for a long time after the initial diagnosis. And like I said, getting diagnosed in the first place is such an equalizer that it doesn't matter if you're being told you have stage one or stage four. It's kind of just like you have cancer and your world stops.
Yeah.
So stage four was horrible, but it kind of brought me back to that first time of being diagnosed with cancer with like, okay, I got diagnosed with cancer. This is the worst possible case scenario. This sucks so much, but what am I going to do? And I remember sitting in the room with my doctor that day and I said, where do I go from here? And he said, well, you can either be the kind of person that lays in your bed, pulls the covers over their head and quits, or you can be the type of person that gets up and lives their life every single day. And so I don't want to cry because that was a very pivotal moment for me. Mm-hmm. And I love Dr. Weiner. He's in a different hospital now, but I still talk to him very frequently. But that was the moment where I said, okay, I can do this. And I just got up and kept on moving. So,
and you kind of never really looked back. I mean, not to say, and I can say this from my own experience, that it's not like you don't have days, right? Like where you're a little low of energy or a little scared more so than usual. But I can tell you by looking at you that your trajectory of attitude didn't ever really look back from that moment. Do you also feel like that? You know, like, and I remember at the beginning when you started treatment, you know, there was, oh my gosh, like, can I go to my favorite Patriots games again? Can I go to concerts? You were a very, very social being. And I feel like you've gotten back to that in a healthy way, you know, like really. And even if you have to wear a mask places where it's not really acceptable from social aspects, you go and you do these things. You went to Italy. So do you feel like that as well, where you were like, yeah, you left that appointment and you were like, I'm going to live.
Yeah. I mean, I also had a lot to live for at that moment for a million different reasons, but I had just met Al, my now husband, literally a couple months before I got diagnosed with stage four. So he knew my history with cancer originally. And, you know, we already knew that, especially with the drugs that I was going to be on, that that would be part of my life forever. But it was kind of something that was behind me at that point. So when I got diagnosed stage four, though, I was in this beautiful new relationship with someone I loved. And I already knew just even a couple months in that I loved him so much. So it was just felt like there was much more even to live for at that point than even after the original diagnosis. And I never really, as you know, told too many people about the first go around, because I kind of just wanted people to know the end result of the great, it's over, I had cancer, but it's gone now. So I had support, but I had support in kind of a not secretive, but like it was like my own little circle of people, just a select few people who knew what was going on. And that was easier for me because the whole world didn't know. And I could just kind of keep it to myself. And I felt like I could go places and people weren't like, oh, how are you feeling? How are you doing? All this stuff. So that was kind of a huge change when 2019 happened and I was diagnosed again, because at that point, people just needed to know I needed help. I needed the support. And then COVID hits, you know, shortly thereafter. And I was honestly, I was pissed. And I remember saying this to you. I was frustrated because you're being told, and I'm trying to live this life, like, you know, get out there and live every second because no one knows how long they have. Mm-hmm. And then COVID and the world is saying, don't do anything. Right. So that just like, I remember that was probably one of my lowest points where I just said to Al, I said, what am I supposed to do here? Like, I'm being told live, you don't know how long you have, but you can't do anything because you're immune compromised and you're at a greater risk than anyone else even is. And we had all these amazing trips planned and we had all these fun things we were going to do. And everything was just sidelined and I was heartbroken, but you know, it's just been really nice to get back from COVID, and I know it's still there and I definitely have to take so many more precautions than other people do. But at the same time, I'm not scared anymore. And I just want to get out there and live the life that I'm supposed to live.
Yeah. Yeah. The privacy thing I think is huge. And I think a lot of the listeners will resonate with that. You know, there is something sacred about going through any crisis, but certainly cancer, because people literally don't know what to say. And of those people, half of them really just f it up, right? Like they just don't say the right thing. So there is, you know, this safety feature to like trying to keep your circle small. And that way you can show up in any form that you want to, right? You don't have to tell people. People aren't going to be bringing it up. And if that happens to be a day, you don't want to talk about it. And like I said, you know, people, you know, they don't want to not say anything. And then they don't want to say anything. And they don't want to not say anything. So that's when they fumble all over themselves. And so I can appreciate the privacy part of it. And like I said, I think the listeners will resonate with that. And then the follow-up to that was the second time around, you are more comfortable with the situation and you needed help. And I think that's the biggest thing a lot of people struggle with is asking for help. So can you tell us a little bit about like, how did you take that first step to be like, okay, so I can't do this alone?
Yeah, it's hard. And I remember the first time when I got diagnosed, you still don't know what's going on and you still don't know how your body's going to react. So the first go around, I just said, you know, and you were so kind to put up like a anonymous post that someone that, you know, through One Mission needs your help. And, you know, it was pretty amazing because we got the support that we needed that time around. And like I said, I never want to go to people with bad news. I'd rather go to people with good news. So it was almost easier for me to say to people after the whole journey, like, yeah, this happened, but guess what? I'm good. It's over now and everything. And it just like, when you're in the midst of the journey, you kind of just, you're so focused that the last thing you want to do is be talking to a million people, reassuring them that you feel okay and that it's all going to be okay. It's like you're protecting yourself. You can't be protecting other people.
Right.
So the second time, unfortunately, it was like, okay, well, this is for the rest of my life. This isn't like you're done with this in a few months or you're done with this in a year. This is the remainder of my life that I'll be on treatment. So there was no hiding it anymore. And I didn't want the people around me to feel like they had to hide it and they were keeping this big secret. So also, I needed help financially. I mean, I have a great job. I have a husband who has a great job. You know, we normally wouldn't be hurting financially, but you know, cancer is very hard, especially when you've been hit with it multiple times. So we're still trying to come back from the first time around and, you know, you're dealing with it the second time. So you have your traditional payments that you're paying for your standard medical treatment, but then, you know, I go to a naturopath and did all this testing to try to make sure that, you know, hopefully this can help keep my cancer at bay in conjunction with my traditional medicine, but also help with the side effects that I feel from the medicines and just make me feel better altogether. But these things are not covered by insurance, so they're very expensive. And then you have the other element of like, I want to enjoy my life. You know, I need to spend the time that I have here doing the things I want to do. And that's expensive as well. So there's a lot of things and you just come to the point where you're like, okay, I need help financially. And also I just need support. I need people around me that even if they are going to say the wrong thing, just people that care. And so I remember when we did the second kind of announcement and GoFundMe that what happened in the same time, which you put together again, because I just couldn't do it. I said to my mom and Al, because I knew that they were going to get it kind of the most, because we said, please don't reach out to Abby. And honestly, I said to them, listen, this is going to happen because I need help, but also you guys need the help. You need the support. It's going to be rough at first. It's going to be beautiful, but also rough because you're going to have to field all these questions. It's going to bring back these feelings of my initial diagnosis to you immediately. And you're going to have to deal with that. And that was very tough. You know, Al's very stoic and said, I got this. Don't worry. Even though I know it was hard for him, my mom, it was very, very hard for her to do that. So listen, it was heartbreaking and beautiful and everything when everybody found out, but it's been amazing because the support that we've received from people that we would have never have even imagined the support from has been wonderful. And yeah, people don't say the right thing. You know, I probably don't even say the right thing. I think metastatic breast cancer is one of the most difficult things for people to even understand. It's very confusing. And so, you know, and I'll often get the, you don't look sick, or, you know, are you done with treatment? All this stuff. There's just so many things that people don't understand and will never understand. And I try to hide, you know, if I have rough days, I try to hide that because that's just not how I want to present myself to the world. But at the same time, there's a lot more that people don't see and people don't understand that happens behind closed doors, because I just want to continue being that person that I am and put on that, you know, brave face basically. But the support has been very, very hard to ask for. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't change anything because it's also been so amazing.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's always the blessing in disguise when you take that risk of like raising your hand and saying like, I need help. Mm-hmm. People really do want to love you and support you through it. And I've seen that, like, I don't even know, triple fold with your friends and family.
Oh my God, it's been amazing.
Yeah, it's super cool. And I think, and hopefully that does help you feel better knowing you have, right, this like team of people, like you have a tribe. Abby's army.
Like I said, it's overwhelming in the best and worst ways possible. Yeah. You know, to just put it plainly, I mean, it's so hard to ask for help. I don't like asking for help for anything. You know, even if I have a surgery, I'm like, I got this. Everybody leave me alone. I don't need you to make me soup or anything like that. I'm good. But it's very overwhelming. It means a lot of amazing people reaching out constantly, which can also be overwhelming because sometimes people will say stuff like, oh, just checking in on you to make sure you're doing well. And what am I going to say? I'm never going to say I'm not doing well. You know, because I want everybody to just be like, you know, okay, she's good. But so it can be very overwhelming in that way. But like I said, it's just also so incredibly beautiful and overwhelming in such a great way too, to just know that you have all these people that you can count on and that would do anything for you.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm going to start with a memory of mine. I remember when we were going the second round and, you know, there was a lot of like, should I go to a naturopath? Should I go to this healer? Like there's so many different ways to live with stage 4 cancer, to try to heal from it. And I know that there was a couple of crucial people that you met on forums or in the doctor's office that you know, became friendly with and got advice from. So what advice do you give to people who are going through that initial, like, okay, so this is going to be the rest of my life. How am I going to live? How am I going to feel my best? How am I going to do this? What do you give to people for advice?
Yeah. So, I mean, both times I was diagnosed, I had, well, the first time it was just like my inner circle, but they were like, they knew all these things or doing research and saying, you should do this, you should do that. But really when it was stage 4 was when I was just getting a flurry of, you know, calls and text messages like, you know, this worked for my friend. Have you tried this? Or I read about this, you know, or I read something personally from doing research. It was just so much information. I didn't even know where to start. And actually you gave me this advice and you said, just write it down, say thank you. Write it down and then see if it makes sense for you, but take things one step at a time. And I know in that moment I needed to get my mind right. So that was the first step for me, was I can't even think about anything until I can get my mind right and kind of calm the anxiety that I'm feeling right now. So you know, I had done after stage one, some massage and Reiki and some alternative treatments that you had taught me about. And I'd gone to Rob Worgen, who's an amazing healer, and I'd found a lot of benefit from that. So I started there. I said, this is what I can do to help get my mind right, so then I can figure out what the next step is. And so that was amazing and super helpful. Then from there, I said, I remember weighing the options with you, like, do I spend this much money and go see this person that maybe can potentially cure me forever, but we don't know if that's even could happen. It's just a possibility. Or it was like, do I invest all this money in, I don't know, doing a whole new diet regimen and, you know, changing my whole life to, you know, eat this specific way. And there was just so many different options. And I had actually been referred to somebody who was keeping her battle secret as well. And she unfortunately recently just passed away, but she was stage four as well. She shared her story with me. And she told me that she was seeing a naturopath and that, you know, it had really, really helped her. So I did a ton of research on that, learned a lot more about the naturopath that I see now. And at that moment, to me, I just felt like I need to see results. I need to understand the science of some things and just know that I could see how things were progressing. And my naturopath does everything by blood tests. So everything that all the supplements I'm on now are specifically suited to me based on the type of cancer I have and what could potentially combat it. So to me, it was the science behind that that I could get behind. So I decided to go that route first and really couldn't afford to do anything else at that time, because just even the initial investment for testing was $20,000, you know, and I spend about $1,200 a month on the supplements. And then there's also the appointments with him as well. So that was a huge jump for me to say, okay, this is where I'm going to start. And I definitely still do the other things that feel right at any given time. You know, it's like acupuncture, Reiki, massage, I go to the chiropractor, just different things that feel right at certain times. I've gotten a lot more into meditating to calm my mind. And I don't know, there's so many things that are available to you out there that you just have to do what feels right for you in that time. And everybody else is just trying to be helpful. And that's amazing that people will give you all these suggestions, but just take them, say thank you, I'll look into it, and then do what feels right for you at that time.
I love that. It's totally true. Because by the way, if you do something because somebody else told you that their best friend, you know, had the success, but you don't wholeheartedly believe in it, it isn't going to work for you.
Without a doubt. Yeah. If you don't have that belief, like, you know, at first I wasn't even sure that I really believed that Reiki would be helpful for me. But then over time, I realized that it was super helpful for me. So yeah, you have to have that, your mind right and your mindset to be able to do something like that and for it to be beneficial to you. Otherwise, you're just laying there on a table and you're not taking anything in.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I think that this was awesome advice for everybody. And I think, you know, the mindset and thinking that, who knows? I mean, none of us, regardless of our health status, are really guaranteed anything but the moment that we're living in. But to be able to actually live, that's another thing. And I feel like you have. And that doesn't mean that you're not scared or fearful at times. It just means that it's more important for you to live than to give in to the fear. Does that sound like that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, definitely scared, you know, or try to pretend I'm not, but get scared when scans come up. And, you know, luckily right now I'm stable. I'll have scans soon and we'll see. But, you know, I always just try to keep that positive mindset that my grandfather said, and my mom always repeats it to me, but that you can't write the script for tomorrow. So you can't just sit there and worry and stress and, you know, think about that, because that's just going to put you in a bad mindset and put you in a bad place. And so even if there are days that I get super frustrated or, you know, I'm just like down, I just say, okay, you can feel that. You're allowed to feel that. Wallow in, you know, whatever you need to do. Like, just have that moment, be emotional, cry, scream, whatever you need to do, but then pick yourself up and move on, because tomorrow's a new day. So I've learned that from a lot of important people in my life. And I just feel like that's the only way I can live right now. And who knows if that mentality is going to change, you know, later down the line, but that's how I'm living currently. And that's how I hope to continue living, because it's giving me the chance to wake up every day and not think, oh, I have cancer. I wake up every day thinking, oh my God, I have a great family. I have amazing dogs. I have a house with a roof over my head. I have a great job. I have the most amazing people in my life. So that keeps me from, you know, thinking about cancer every single second of my life. So that's how I choose to live. It might not be how everyone wants to live, but, you know, that's what's worked for me so far.
Well, that, as I already told you, and this is why I wanted you to come on the podcast, is that whole mindset has positively affected me. You know, I think, and I deal with migraines, but it's not cancer, but there's a ton of fear and anxiety around that. So for me to be able to say, like, if Abby can have this mindset, I can have this mindset. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I may have an episode tomorrow. I may have an episode in 35 minutes, but right now I'm having an amazing conversation with you, and it's a gift. So I thank you for that. And I don't know if I thank you enough for that, but I'm very, very happy to have you in my life, and for a whole host of reasons, but one of them, because I admire you a lot.
Well, thank you. That means the world to me, because I obviously admire you. And honestly, like, you're a motivator for me, and you've been there every step of the way. So I can't thank you enough. And I, you know, for your friendship and your guidance throughout this whole process, and just understanding, you know, you're so great. If I'm like, I got to go to a doctor's appointment, you're like, yep, good, go do it. You know what I mean? And you're just always there to support me. And the kids that we help are such a motivator for me too, because it's like, you just see the strength and resilience that really only a kid can have. And it's almost like the not really understanding or the not really knowing, but there you see them laughing and playing and having so much fun. And I'm like, okay, these kids can do it. I can do it. So, you know, working at One Mission has been a true gift. And almost it was like I was meant to be there throughout this process for myself, because it's been so helpful to have the kids and to have you and to have such an amazing team around me. It's just constantly being there for each other. So it's been great.
Yeah. Life happens for a reason, and the people in our lives are there for a reason. So that was amazing. I think that people are definitely going to take away at least what I did from it. And I love the advice too. You know, listening to what feels right to you and what is resonates with you is what's right for you, not what everybody else thinks you should do. That was my biggest takeaway from this.
Definitely. So. And I would just leave by saying one thing that Kim Chisholm, who used to work at One Mission, told me a long time ago. I think it might've been the first time I had cancer, when you guys literally drove me home that day. She came by a few days later and she dropped off one of my favorite things, which is Parmesan goldfish. And, she said to me, just be kind to yourself. And I cry every time I say it, because you know me, and I've always been very hard on myself. And I think a lot of people are your own worst critic, your own worst enemy sometimes, but excuse me, I'll get it together. I would just say that, like, everybody has their own journey. Everybody has something going on. So be kind to other people, but also be kind to yourself, because if you're not kind to yourself, it's going to get you nowhere. You just have to be the best version of yourself you can possibly be, not compare yourself to others, and just treat yourself right. I just think that it's so important. And I honestly, like, will never forget those words that she told me, because in that moment, I was being so hard on myself. I was like, what did I do to deserve this? Not even like, how did I get cancer? But like, what did I do to deserve this? And it really took me to that next, it took a little while, but it took me to the next stage of saying, I didn't do anything to deserve this. This isn't something I brought on myself. This is something that just happened to me. And now I need to figure out how to deal with it. So even if there's times where I get really down on myself and I say, you know, I'm frustrated because my medicine's making my hair fall out and I don't feel pretty, or my medicine's made me gain so much weight that I just don't feel like myself, or, you know, that I can't give my husband the kids that he so desperately wants, I have to recenter myself and just say, it's okay. You know, I'm a good person and I didn't ask for this.
Mm-hmm. And to love yourself anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So to anyone listening, be kind to yourself, love yourself, and, you know, accept the support and love that people want to give you, because it's all good things and it can only help you.
I agree. Oh my God, that's amazing. What an amazing, amazing way to end. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Thank you for letting me share, and sorry for crying.
Oh, don't apologize at all. Well, you heard it. I'm not even going to say one last thing. I'm going to leave on Abby's words. Love yourself, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to Healing Conversations, a One Mission podcast. Remember, you're not alone in your healing journey. Many have come before you and many will come after. Everyone has a story. By sharing yours, you heal the world. We're so grateful to our guests for their vulnerability, honesty, and healing vibrations. Cancer can steal a kid's childhood. We help them get it back through programs and activities that foster friendship, fun, and positive distractions from treatment. Whether it's putting on holiday celebrations,
providing art and music therapy, or paying for expensive hospital parking, One Mission makes life brighter for children and their families from the moment of diagnosis through treatment and beyond. Follow us on Instagram at One Mission Official and on Facebook at One Mission. Join our mailing list at onemission.org to stay up to date on our news and events. This podcast is sponsored by Provident Healthcare Partners. If you would like to become a part of this podcast, email us at info@onemission.org. To keep this podcast going, please consider a donation to One Mission that will bring programs and services to kids fighting cancer. Text DONATE to 44321. To learn more about my healing journey with chronic pain, overworking, and collapse into migraines, read my book, The Unspoken, available on Amazon. Thanks to our producer, Michael Harmon.